A production of SDPB, South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning, everyone listening in on the internet, and those of you that have joined us this morning for Senate Commerce. We have quite a few items on the agenda, and so we're going to move through those with diligence. And at this time, I'd ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Adelstein? Senator Gant? Senator Merchant? Senator Nesselhoff? Senator Turback-Berry. Here. Senator Nelson.
Here.
Senator Olson.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you very much. Chair to entertain a motion to approve the minutes. There's been a motion by Senator Turback-Berry, a second from Senator Adelstein to approve the minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you very much. I'll now turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Senator Nelson, and we'll hear the calendar for the day in the order in which it's presented.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First item on our agenda today is Senate Bill 90. Senate Bill 90, and I will ask for proponents of Senate Bill 90. Senator Olson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here in front of you this morning. I didn't really realize, I know what the sides of your heads look like, so it's nice to see you head on this morning. I bring to you today Senate Bill 90. Senate Bill 90 is an act that increases the number of varieties of malt beverages, wine, distilled spirits, liquor, and cordials that an off-sale alcoholic beverage license E may offer on a sampling in one given day. There are quite a few different measurements and limitations to what can be offered on a sampling day for these off-sale establishments, many of which go right down to the number of teaspoons and tablespoons that are offered. I assure you this isn't any stretch of a keg party or anything like that. This is going to, I believe, allow these off-sale liquor establishments to provide and educate their consumers the best alternatives and the best varieties available for them. And I would, at this time, stand down and let the experts fill you in on the need for this bill, and I will stand by for questions.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Further proponents, Senate Bill 90. Mr. Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name's Tim Doherty. I'm a registered lobbyist for Anheuser-Busch Companies, and I'm also a registered lobbyist for the Licensed Beverage Dealers Association. I'm not sure that I would qualify as an expert with regard to this topic. I haven't had a drink in about 23 years, so it's not something that, at least in terms of sampling, I know much about. But under current law, a retailer may only offer for sampling one variety of beer, one variety of wine, and one variety of spirits. And this bill simply increases the number that could be offered from one to three. It doesn't increase the size or the total number of samples that the consumer may have. Current law limits the size of the samples that may be offered to a consumer. And current law also says that a consumer cannot consume more than three samples. The advantage of this bill for the retailer is that it would give the retailer more flexibility in marketing their products. They could, instead of just providing you with one sample of beer, for example, the retailer could provide three samples of different beer brands. So you could maybe sample a Budweiser product versus a Miller product. You could sample one brand of wine versus another brand of wine. And as Representative Olson pointed out, this is an opportunity to educate the consumer, to give the consumer some more choices. Consumers can compare tastes, they can compare prices based on brands and make an informed decision in their purchases. And so we think this is a modest change in the law that will benefit the business community and the consumers. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Doherty. I will stand down for questions at the end. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further proponents?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Nancy Johnson, registered lobbyist with the South Dakota Beer Wholesalers Association. And since we're on the record, I will not testify to my expertise, but it's been less than 23. It might be less than 23 hours. There are over 400 different malt beverages available in South Dakota brought to you by the South Dakota Beer Wholesalers. What we do is we work with any number of producers within the state, producers out of state, and producers, manufacturers across the world to bring those products. We actually become the marketing arm. Our ability to then go to a retailer, help him or her make the decision whether or not they want to bring that product to their customers is an essential part of bringing that customer choice, helping that retailer make a good decision about shelf space, cooler space, etc. You don't want to bring in a product that's not going to move, especially a product that has a limited shelf life. This allows the consumer to come in, taste. As an example, I had never tried Sam Adams Cherry Wheat, and quite honestly, at $9 a six-pack, I probably wouldn't have bought any. I tried a sample at an event, liked it. I have some. With 400 products, whether it's from Firehouse Brewing Company, Granite City, Anheuser-Busch, Stella, all sorts of those things now become available, limited quantities, in an off-sale environment where they're sold according to the hours, according to the age limits, and we know that the tax is paid. With that, I'd stand down for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Further proponents of Senate Bill 90. Senator Adelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Stanford Adelstein, Senator from District 32, and I wouldn't qualify as a professional either, but I am an amateur, and I'm very interested in the growth of tourism in the Black Hills. I might also say that I'm an investor in Valiant Vineyards, from whom you'll hear next, so that I do have a personal business interest, but that isn't what brings me to the table. What brings me to the table is that the sampling of wine in the Black Hills is an important additional attraction for tourists. In fact, my 23-year-old granddaughter, who's in a doctoral program in Washington, D.C., was visiting, and she had the wonderful time. She said, "You know, Gramps, I didn't know that there were that many things to do in the Black Hills," and she enjoyed that sampling. Obviously, she was of age, and it was a wonderful idea, and it keeps people, it increases industry in the state, increases jobs, and I strongly urge the passage of this bill.
Further proponents? Representative Nygaard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Eldon Nygaard. I'm here in my other life as an individual representing Valiant Vineyards. I'm the president of Valiant Vineyards, a South Dakota C corporation with principal offices in Vermilion, South Dakota. And with that background, we are the first winery in the state of South Dakota. There are now 17, and we're in the process of investing another $3 million into the tourism industry, primarily out in Pennington County, with number 18. And I've had a history of being involved not only with beverage manufacturing, but we also have a retail license of on-sale beverages. And we have now become involved with our artisan distilleries in their infancy. And I view this bill, Senate Bill 90, as a major improvement in that tasting and testing of products, because it opens up the opportunity to have more than one variety of beverages sampled. And as Mr. Doherty testified, it does not increase the amount that any one person could consume. So we're not dealing with a situation that creates a public safety problem or in any way endangers the public. It is really existing law in terms of quantity. It just makes it more economically feasible, so that if someone's tastes are such that they would rather taste a different beverage, you can have that with you and let them sample that one. So with that, I would say I hope that you do pass Senate Bill 90. I'll remain available for questions.
Thank you. Further proponents, Senate Bill 90. Proponents for Senate Bill 90. We'll then go to opponents, Senate Bill 90. Are there opponents to Senate Bill 90? With that, I will turn this over for questions from the committee. Senator Nesselhoff.
I have a question for Nancy, please. Good morning. That was Sam Adams' cherry wheat?
True.
Excellent. Okay, thank you.
There are actually six different Sam Adams in a sampler pack.
Senator Turbeck.
I've got two questions for whoever here knows the answer. First, I'm just curious why this is, if anybody knows, why this is a matter that's regulated by state law in the first place, what the policy interest is behind it. But then my second question, I just want to clarify, are we talking about no licensee may offer more than three varieties? In other words, is this per licensee that these restrictions are set up?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tim Daugherty, if I may answer Senator Turbeck Berry's question. First, Senator, the state has regulated this area to protect the consumers or to protect the public from people consuming alcohol in an off-sale business. Normally, alcohol is consumed in an on-sale business. And in other words, a bar or a restaurant. And normally you can't consume alcohol in an off-sale business like a liquor store or retail type store. And the on-sale operators have people who are trained to deal with people who are consuming alcohol on the premises. And typically you don't see that as much in an off-sale establishment. With respect to your second question, it is limited to just, each retailer or each licensee.
I wasn't very artful in my question, but thank you. You answered them as stated. I guess I understand why we might say no individual may be offered, no licensee may offer more than three samples to any one individual. I'm puzzled why we as a state care whether there's one variety, three varieties, or 15 varieties offered, if each individual can only be offered a total of three samples anyway.
I'm not sure I know the answer to that question, Senator. I don't know why it was limited to just one variety. And frankly, I have no objection to it if it was more than three varieties, but I think that on whole, most people felt that three was probably the right number.
It appears that Representative Nygaard has the answer to this question.
Okay.
I'm just as anxious as everyone else to hear Nygaard speak on this one because I'm not sure I know the answer to this one. But Eldon Nygaard, Valiant Vineyards. I think that the history of these laws going back to, I would guess, late 30s, early 40s, just highly conservative and concerned about alcohol consumption, period. The issue today is that by moving to, instead of bringing one bottle out that you could sample, now you can bring three, so that as you have the fixed cost of the hourly person out there doing it, the travel, the time, and the beverage, and so it just makes it more efficient for as we struggle in these in this deepening recession to make things work. I think it helps the alcohol industry and the retailer. but specifically as to why it was only one, I have no idea.
Further questions? Senate Bill 90. Senator Adelstein.
Someone explain to me why in the last sentence, pardon me. Did someone please explain to me why in the on line six that sampling is not permitted on Sunday, inasmuch as on sale is permitted on Sundays after certain hours in some jurisdictions?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tim Doherty, if I may, Senator, the reason I was hesitating, Senator Adelstein, is I don't know the answer to that question, so I can't answer it.
Further questions, Senate Bill 90? Further questions? If not, I'll close for questions and open for committee action and or comment.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move an amendment to strike the language at the end of line 14 that says no more than, strike lines 1 and 2 on page 2, and strike the language in any one day, period, on line 3.
Second.
We have an amendment moved and seconded.
Mr. Chairman, is it in order to offer another amendment now or one at a time? Thank you.
Yes, we have to dispose of this amendment before we move on.
If I might just ask a question.
Senator Nesselhoff.
My understanding then this would, we would still have the limit on samples, but we would get rid of this fairly interesting limit on the varieties that can be offered for sampling.
An individual would still be limited to being offered a total of three samples by any one licensee, but it would be up to the licensee if they wanted to open three bottles or five bottles. It just seems to me that that's purely a business matter that the state has no interest in.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would say that makes just a huge amount of sense.
Motion and second on the amendment. Further comments on the amendment? Hearing none, then, those in favor of the Turbeck-Berry Amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adelstein.
I would move an amendment to strike the sentence on page 2, line 5, the sentence that begins with no malt beverage, et cetera, and ends on the word Sunday, period.
Is there a second? Senator Alstein.
What it would be, I would strike the sentence, no malt beverage, wine, distilled spirits, liquor, or cordial may be offered for sampling on any Sunday, period. In other words, my amendment would strike that day of the week, inasmuch as we have tourists in the Black Hills, we have the kind of offering, it would be, this was... Well, I can't speak anymore. I don't like to speak anymore until I get a second or anything.
Second.
Yes, we have a second. Further discussion on the amendment.
I think that prohibition on Sunday, which sometimes referred to as a blue law, goes back to a day long ago when the worry was that if a person tasted liquor on the Christian Sabbath, then they would somehow interfere with the sermon of the morning. My experience not being Christian is I find Christians sometimes that have a drink in the afternoon can more eloquently speak of the sermon they heard that morning.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Turbeck.
I have a question for either committee members or if it needs to be for the crowd, I don't know. What is the situation with on sale? I'll confess ignorance. Somebody mentioned to on sale being available on Sunday. I don't know offhand what our law provides. Locally controlled, up to the municipality whether they allow on sale.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adelson.
I'm not really talking about on sale, I'm talking about off sale.
I understand, but for comparison purposes, I was curious because the argument was made earlier that you can get a drink, or maybe you were the one that made it, Senator Adelstein, you can get a drink on Sunday at an on sale. I'm just curious. I confess ignorance. I don't know what the law is, but Bob Ryder does. Okay, Tim does.
Mr. Doherty.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tim Doherty. Well, with respect to on sale, Senator, the law has been that if you have a special license and serve food, you can serve alcohol on Sundays. Off sale is local option. I think one of the reasons why it was restricted to Sundays is because in the past, most liquor stores are never open on Sundays and typically aren't, even now. So, but I suspect maybe the wineries are. I don't
know. But an on-sale establishment would be allowed to serve on Sunday only if they qualify because of the quantity of food that they serve?
Right, unless there's a bill I saw yesterday that somebody introduced that would change that.
Further comments on the amendment? Hearing none, then we'll vote on Senator Adelstein's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you. Further discussion, Senate Bill 90 as amended. Motion and second do pass. Discussion? Hearing none, then the motion is due pass on Senate Bill 90. Secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Gant? Merchant?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Trebek-Berry?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
And Senate Bill 90 goes to the floor as due pass. As amended, thank you. Motion and second consent.
No.
Consent is withdrawn. Point of order in this situation, does the chair give the gavel back or is it taken away?
This is a democracy, so I would just wait for you to relinquish it. Thank you very much, Vice Chairman Nelson. That was a very excellent first run, and we appreciate your professionalism through that hearing. We'll now move to Senate Bill 111, an act to authorize unemployment benefits for the spouses of certain military personnel. And I would at this time call for proponents of Senate Bill 111. Welcome. Please state your name. And as a reminder, if you're going to be a proponent or an opponent to bills today for this hearing, please remember to sign in legibly at the back of the room. And I would also ask that all questions are directed and the appropriate responses through the chair. Welcome, Senator Haverly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On my notes, I have Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'll go ahead and I'll revise that at this time and say Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
That might influence a vote or two.
Anyway, my name is Senator Jeff Haverly. I represent District 35 in Rapid City. What I'm going to talk to you about today, and it's going to be extremely brief, and I'll go into why it's going to be brief, is a bill that deals with unemployment for military spouses. Now, the issue of unemployment compensation for military spouses due to transfer in South Dakota is one of the 10 key issues that the Department of Defense has identified for passage among states through the military partnerships. Many of you may be aware of another bill that's already heard on one side that dealt with the state compact for transferability of school-age records for dependents that was also before a committee already, and that was on the House side. The need for this bill, though, is justified and self-explanatory. But, however, due to the economic situation both in the state and the nation, I will ask the members to dispose of this bill for reasons that I will lay out during the bill brief. Many of you know that there's an exemption to the disqualification for unemployment compensation if the claimant leaves his or her job for good cause. Currently, the good cause definition specifically exempts an employee who leaves a job to transfers with a spouse to a new location. When serving our country, military members don't have a choice in declining a transfer. They are directed by a military order to relocate, so there is no choice. This is no different in South Dakota, yet we are one of five states that exclude military spouses from such a benefit. The definition of good cause would include a person who is a spouse of a member of the armed services to a new military assignment from which the individual's place of employment is not reasonably accessible. Realizing that these types of involuntary separations are not the responsibility of the employer nor the under the employer's control, an unemployment compensation bill, or in our case, a change in the current statute, would allow or would ensure that the costs in these cases would not be charged to the employer, but rather to a pool for unassigned cost. The estimates for potential claimants under this change would represent less than 0.2% of the total annual beneficiaries on the state of South Dakota. This brings me to the efforts of myself and Representative Gosch, who is the prime sponsor on the House side. We have a mirror bill just on that side to give it some visibility this year. The effort started before session, and it would not be fair to at least bring the bill to the process, if for no other reason, just to inform the legislature of this very important issue facing our military families at this time. However, to bring a bill that would have even ever so slight of an impact to the unemployment trust fund, even though it would have major positive effects and impacts on the military family, would not be prudent in these economic times. Military families continue to make tremendous sacrifices, especially now in increased times of mobilization, not only within states but overseas to the Middle East and other countries around the globe. In addition to these challenges, such as school transitions for children and frequent separation of family, a spouse must often work to meet the financial needs of the family, not unlike the general population, depend on a dual income to avoid hardship. I hope you treat this as an awareness briefing for this ongoing problem, and I know we'll be looking for your support next year of not only this committee, but the full body, that it may be assigned to the full legislature and the state. With that, I ask you to dispose of this bill for the time being, and I will stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Senator Haverly. Normally, we would call for, well, as I say, we would call for additional proponents, but I think in respect to Senator Haverly, the chair would entertain a motion to table. There's been a motion to table Senate Bill 111 by Senator Turbeck-Berry, seconded by Senator Gant. Any further discussion? Or I wouldn't, excuse me, it's a tabling motion, so the secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein?
No.
Gant?
Aye.
Merchant?
No.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Turbeck-Berry?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
5-2.
Senate Bill 111 is hereby considered tabled. Thank you for your time, Senator. Next item on our agenda is House Bill 1027, an act to provide for certain employer insurance assistance programs. Would proponents of House Bill 1027 please come forward? Welcome, Mr. Moses.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Randy Moses, Division of Insurance. House Bill 1027 is a bill that arises out of the Zinnia Task Force from a couple of years ago that was formed to look at health insurance availability in South Dakota. There were quite a number of recommendations coming out of that task force, one of which was to establish an employer assistance program for health insurance. Last year, the governor asked the health care commission to take that task upon itself in following through on that Zinnia recommendation, and they, in fact, formed a subcommittee to, in fact, do so. The subcommittee met and came up with four recommendations, and one of those recommendations is House Bill 1027. About the bill itself, this bill tries to do is to allow insurance companies and insurance agencies to offer offer insurance services that they're not able to under current law. Current law does prohibit rebating in the area of insurance, and so services that are provided that are outside the parameters of the insurance policy are not allowed. You can't give something in consideration for an insurance contract that's not in the contract itself. This would allow services that some, for instance, insurance agencies, insurance companies have urged us to allow. A couple of examples would be an agency that would provide assistance to employers by taking care of the COBRA administration services. Not all health insurance companies automatically provide for COBRA administration as an extra burden on the employer. This would allow the agent to provide those services on behalf of that employer. Another thing that's been brought to our attention, both agents and companies have indicated a desire to offer, in addition to the health insurance policy, wellness programs and to assist employers in putting those together. Outside the health insurance arena, there's been a host of services that have been wanted to be provided for on the property casualty side, such as safety programs for employers. We think all of these have a problem under the current law. This would clarify that services, not cash, but services provided that are insurance-related by agents and companies would be allowed. And with that, I will close my comments and urge passage and stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further proponents on House Bill 1027? Further proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. David Owen, South Dakota Chamber of Commerce and Industry, speaking not just as our policy wonk, but as a guy that manages a very small office with about four employees. Anything that can be done to kind of help clarify some of these rather complicated issues is a step in the right direction, and we support the bill.
Thank you. Are there other proponents for House Bill 1027? Additional proponents? Are there any opponents to House Bill 1027? Opponents to House Bill 1027? Seeing none. Are there any questions of the members of the committee? Senator Beckberry.
Thank you, sir. Randy, on page 2, line 3, I understand the first half of the sentence, page 2, line 3, where it says the employer assistance program may not consist of any monetary payments made to the employer. Explain to me, if you would, the second half of that sentence and what that relates to and why we need that.
It would be also be made on behalf of the employer for the purchase of insurance. So let's say that the agent decides, you know what, go ahead and purchase this policy from me, and I will go ahead and pay the premium to the insurance company for you. We don't want that.
Any other questions from the committee?
Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing for House Bill 1027 and move for committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adelstein.
I think this is an excellent program, having had this sort of training through the years when I ran a company. I would therefore move do pass.
There is a do pass motion from Senator Adelstein, a second from Senator Gant. Any other additional discussion? Seeing none, those in favor will say aye. Opposed, say nay. The secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Trebek-Berry? Nelson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
House Bill 1027 is thereby considered passed. There's been a motion from Senator Adelstein for consent, a second from Senator Gant for consent. All those in favor of consent say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Therefore, it'll be on the consent calendar, which moves us to House Bill 1030. An act to repeal certain requirements for the filing of annual actuarial certifications. Again, Mr. Moses, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Randy Moses, Division of Insurance. House Bill 1030 deals with actuarial certifications for rates for health insurance. This requirement basically says that the insurance companies must file each year what's this certification from an actuary that says, in essence, that the rates that they have put together comply with the rating band requirements and statute. That is the maximum variation between from one individual to another based upon health status, age, etc. Quite frankly, the division has found that these certifications are of no regulatory value. We don't even look at them. They're like 2-3 sentences long. If we are going to determine whether or not an insurance company is in compliance with the rating bands, it would require a fairly lengthy audit. We've been through some of these. It's a very, very long process, and the certifications are not part of the process and really of no value. So in essence, what we're doing is requiring the insurance companies to file something, go through the cost of filing it, and really doesn't do us or the public any good. And therefore, we're seeking the requirement that, or getting rid of that requirement. The insurance companies still have to keep that information on file so we can look at it when we want in case we have any questions or concerns about their rates. But it gets rid of the unnecessary filing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moses. Any other proponents for House Bill 1030? Any other proponents? Are there any opponents to House Bill 1030? Seeing none, we'll move to questions from the committee. Any questions? Seeing no questions, the hearing for House Bill 1030 is hereby closed, and the chair would open this up for committee discussion and or action. Senator Nesselhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I very much appreciate the department bringing forward a bill like this. I think any time we can make the process easier and smoother, that's a good idea, and I would move to pass.
There's been a motion by Senator Nesselhoff to do pass, a second from Senator Adelstein. Therefore, the motion is do pass House Bill 1030. Any other discussion on the motion? Seeing none, we will hereby call the secretary will call the roll. Anybody in favor, say aye. All opposed, say nay.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Terbeck-Berry?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
House Bill 1030 is hereby passed, and there's been a motion by Senator Nesselhoff, a second by Senator Gant to place House Bill 1030 on the consent calendar. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's hereby on the consent calendar. This moves us to House Bill 1047, an act to increase the membership of the Board of Directors for the Economic Development Finance Authority. Proponents for House Bill 1047, please come forward. And as a reminder, if you're going to testify today, please make sure that you've signed in at the podium and print legibly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Mike Youngberg from the Governor's Office of Economic Development, Tourism,
welcome.
State Development. Talked about the bill today. The Economic Development Finance Authority makes credit decisions and all other decisions on the pool loan bond program and agricultural processing and exporting loan programs. The Economic Development Finance Authority board is smaller than the other boards that oversee the programs the GOED does administer, and therefore we have less input when vetting applications with this board. Over the last couple of years, there has been an increase in the amount of business applications for both pooled loan bond programs and Apex loans. We've noticed that increasing. By adding two members to the board, we believe it add more diversity, expertise, and additional input when vetting applications for these programs. Having a larger board will also give GOED more flexibility to schedule additional meetings. It's normally scheduled once a month. The meetings are, but occasionally a borrower applicant does ask us to make schedule additional meetings or move those meetings up. This will give us that flexibility to help address those borrowers' requests. The board does not receive a stipend for meetings, no additional cost as part of this bill. I'll stand down for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Youngberg. Are there any other proponents for House Bill 1047? Seeing none, we'll move to opponents. Are there any opponents to House Bill 1047? No opponents. I therefore entertain any questions from the committee on House Bill 1047. Senator Nesselhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for you just on the last line here, which I see this quite often in different commissions, but no more than we want to up it to six members of the board, maybe members of the same political party. I understand why we add that language in when we're looking at commissions or committees that are formed by legislators. I'm curious as to if that is important as part of this, why that would be there. If it is important, I think six is way too high a number, and if it's not important, I think we should scrap the whole language. So I'd be curious as to your opinion on this.
Mr. Youngberg.
Address. Thanks for the question, Mr. Senator. It's been typical that we see that type of language in there. This board actually is, if I'm remembering right, three Republicans, one independent, and one Democrat. Probably just the thought process in putting in there was just to make sure there was some diversity there among the different parties. So.
Senator Nesla.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Terbeckberry.
I think diversity is good. I think diversity is wonderful. Bipartisanship is even better. But six out of seven being from one party certainly doesn't promote diversity or bipartisanship, not to mention the terrible disregard that probably independents would suffer. I'm going to move that line seven of the bill be amended so that the language is restored to four and the change to six be deleted.
Second. There's been a motion from Senator Terbeckberry to amend line 7 to strike the 6 and return it to 4 members of the board. There's also been a second on that amendment by Senator Merchant. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. I said it prevails. Does that mean that you've already made up your mind as to whether or not the chair is neutral on these deals? We are now moving into
Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment to the bill as now amended that on line 7, rather than 4, that the number be 5.
There's been a motion by Senator Adelstein to amend the amended version of House Bill 1047 to strike the now 4 members and move that to 5. Is there a second? There's a motion and a second to amend the amended version of House Bill 1047 to on line 7 to add 5 and strike the 4. All those in favor of the amendment? Oh, excuse me. Go ahead, Senator Nesloff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think on a board like this, the last thing really I want to be a qualifier is political party. And I think understanding that that's always going to be somewhat a factor, considering that the governor tends to be a fairly political person, and they're going to know people, you know, in their circle are probably going to be of the same political party. I think 5 gives this, since we're upping it to 7, gives us the flexibility that probably won't be a consideration, and I think that's a good compromise. 6 is much too high, 4 is too little. I think we found the just right number here, so I will support the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I served on the GO-Ed board, which was a bipartisan board, and we had a balance, and indeed we should have, but if the reason for increasing the numbers, which is still sort of peculiar to me, but the reason for changing the numbers is to have more flexibility at meetings, and if there is a political consideration, then we have to have more balance, but I think that the governor of either party might really want the meetings to be balanced as well.
The motion before us is an amendment by Senator Adelstein, seconded by Senator Nesselhoff, to strike the 4 and add 5 on line 7. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. We're back to discussion on House Bill 1047 as amended. There's been a motion by Senator Terbeckberry and a second by Senator Merchant to do pass House Bill 1047. Any other discussion on that? Seeing none, the secretary will call the roll. All in favor of the do-pass motion on House Bill 1047, indicate by saying aye. All opposed, say nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein.
Aye.
Gant.
Aye.
Merchant.
Aye.
Nesselhoff.
Aye.
Terbeck-Berry.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Unanimous.
It's House Bill 1047 has passed with the majority, and Senator Nesselhoff has moved consent, seconded by Senator Merchant. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? It will be on consent.
Mr. Chairman, I move adjournment.
Seeing no other business before us, there's been a motion by Senator Adelstein and a second by Senator Merchant to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're hereby adjourned.